So what I'm going to speak about today actually comes from data from the National Institutes of Health funded grant. This is just a small piece of it, but it was so consistent with what we're looking at here at the APHA conference that I thought it would be helpful to think about things from the perspective of location and geography. And I have nothing to declare. So we look at issues here in terms of diabetes and prediabetes because, indeed, they are so prevalent in this country and throughout the world. We know, for example, that there are more than 29 million Americans who had diabetes in 2012, including 1.7 million new cases in adults 20 and over. And the thing of great concern to me and to the work that we're doing is that over 8 million of them were undiagnosed. That's pretty scary. Perhaps of equal concern is that there are 86 million Americans at least 20 years old who have prediabetes, and they are at great risk of ultimately developing diabetes, and the vast majority of those people don't know that they have it. So we really have to do a better job in terms of helping people to identify the fact that they are, in fact, at risk for diabetes or actually have diabetes. And that's where our work takes its importance. So who should be screened for diabetes and, by implication, prediabetes? According to the American Diabetes Association, people at least 45 years of age, or people under 45 years of age who are overweight, that is, having a BMI of 25 kilograms per meter square or higher, and at least one other risk factor, including a first-degree relative with diabetes, Latino ethnicity, at-risk race, little or no exercise on a given day, a woman who gave birth to a baby greater than 9 pounds because she likely had gestational diabetes, and there are yet other factors, but these, I believe, are the major ones. So why is it important that we screen? Well, early identification and treatment of prediabetes can actually reverse its course, and people who already have diabetes, their complications could be mitigated by early detection coupled with lifestyle modification and various interventions, whether they be medication or some other lifestyle adjustment, in order to optimize their glycemic control. Some researchers have identified a relationship between lower socioeconomic status and diabetes in the United States. In particular, they found that it's related to greater diabetes incidence and prevalence, but also to obesity and minority race or ethnicity, key components of diabetes risk. But what hasn't been looked at in the United States, certainly, is whether or not there is a relationship between SES, neighborhood SES, and rates of diabetes screening, which again is what we're talking about today. So the study I indicated that we are completing now takes place at the NYU College of Dentistry, and the data I'm reporting on today took place, the data that we collected took place between June of 2013 and January of 2014. And we recruited quite a number of people who were seeking care at dental visits. Why dental visits? Well, clearly, if we have 8 million plus people who have diabetes and aren't diagnosed, and we have so many people with prediabetes who don't know that they have it, we need to increase the places where people can get screened. And one thought we had was, well, what about at a dental visit? And the reason for that, and my training is in statistics, so I did an analysis that we published in the American Journal of Public Health about a year or two ago that showed that 20 million people in the United States see a dentist in a given year, but not a primary care provider. That may surprise some of us, but I think you would agree that if you have a toothache, you're going to see a dentist. But if you have a cold, you might try to get over that cold on your own. So it really isn't so surprising when you think about it from that perspective. And it seemed to us that a dental visit might offer an opportunity for screening. So to be eligible, people had to have gums that bled on flossing. The reason for that is the major goal of this study was to see whether or not we could screen for diabetes using blood from the mouth, because that's how dentists and patients would be most comfortable when they went to a dental visit, in terms of having blood collected rather than pricking their finger. And so this larger study, of which what I'm going to report on today is a piece, was looking at how well correlated are the results of testing for diabetes with hemoglobin A1C by taking blood from the finger and blood from the mouth. How well does that correlate? Taking blood from the mouth might have contaminants in it, so it wasn't at all clear that that would be a good way to do this. We have a paper coming out in the American Journal of Public Health that will give the results of that. We actually got a correlation of 0.99. So the answer is, it seems like a good way to screen for diabetes. The eligibility criteria are there. They had to, again, have gums that bled on brushing or flossing, be at least 18 years old, not require antibiotics before dental treatment, not have severe medical conditions, as in number four, and they either had to be told they had diabetes by a primary care provider or be at risk, as per the American Diabetes Association criteria. And for these analyses, we eliminated the group of people who'd been told they had diabetes. So what we did, in brief, was people came in for their dental appointments. We approached them to recruit them for the study. We gave them an eligibility questionnaire. If they were eligible and gave informed consent to participate, they filled out a questionnaire for us on sociodemographics and healthcare utilization. We took their finger stick and their oral blood. We collected it on filter paper, sent it out to a laboratory, had the laboratory analyze the hemoglobin A1C on both samples, and then gave them a brief survey at the end to find out what their experience was like in terms of the screening. And for these analyses, we're using the hemoglobin A1C levels from the finger, because the other was what we were seeking to learn about. What we did then is we collected zip codes, that is, addresses, from all of our participants, because we were in touch with people to give them their results of the hemoglobin A1C test. We had their zip codes, and we used the New York State zip code rankings according to median household income based on U.S. Census American Community Survey data. And we grouped people into three categories based on those zip codes: low income, medium income, and high income. And this gives you a sense of the various characteristics of our participants. You'll see that there really were no differences in terms of the proportion of women in the study, nor the proportion of people who indicated they got little or no exercise on a given day. But people in the low socioeconomic status neighborhoods were younger in general than the others, thank you, Their BMI, a greater proportion had high BMI. A greater proportion had a first degree relative with diabetes. They were more likely than those in the high income categories to be Latino. They were more likely to be of minority race ethnicity and to have had a baby greater than 9 pounds. And I have a number of graphs here to show you some of the differences that came up. This is the proportion of hemoglobin A1C levels in the elevated range according to those income categories. And you can see that although there was a difference, it was not statistically significantly so. The mean hemoglobin A1C levels according to medium household income categories, the values themselves, again, there was no real difference there. The place where there was a difference was when we asked about primary care health service characteristics according to median household income categories. You can see that most people had a primary care provider, but the really important pieces are the graphs on the right. When we asked if people had ever had a blood glucose test, we found that the low-income group were least likely to have had one before, in spite of the fact that they were just as likely to have a primary care provider. And that is the main point of this talk. That's our takeaway. Dental visits. Many saw a dentist in the past year. Again, no differences there in the groups. And most people who saw a dentist, as you can see, no matter what group they were in, thought it would be a good place to screen for diabetes. And here are some of the responses for why among the low-income group individuals. Certain people don't go to the doctor but would go to the dentist. Diabetes screening is important. The doctor and the dentist should work together. It's fast, easy, practical, sterile. Two things done at the same time. Convenient. A lot of kill two birds with one stone, we heard. So, in summary, there were no significant differences in hemoglobin A1C levels in the three neighborhood socioeconomic status groups. But at-risk adults in the low-income neighborhoods, although they were no less likely to have a primary care provider, they were significantly less likely to have had a blood glucose test in the past. And we think this might be because people in the low SES neighborhoods may go to a primary care provider in a clinic for an acute condition. They might use the emergency room as their primary care provider. We didn't specifically ask where they went, but it may be that prevention is not the primary objective. We know from our work and others that screening for diabetes is feasible and has the potential to reach many patients at dental visits. The dental patients themselves express support for diabetes screening at dental visits, not only in this study, but others. And in general, we find two separate streams of dentistry and medical care. Thank you. And I would argue that this is not helping patients, that we need to begin to think out of the box a bit, because obviously we're missing a lot of people who really need support. We acknowledge limitations. Our study sample wasn't a random one. These are people who are already going to get dental care, so they may not really represent everyone out there who lives in a low SES neighborhood, and they may have a different view about support from dentists and from the health services provided by primary care providers from others, and also a lot of it is self-report. but there is a critical need to increase diabetes screening opportunities for at-risk adults, especially in low-income neighborhoods, and the dental visit, we would argue, has great potential to serve as an alternate diabetes screening site to reduce the number of people who are undiagnosed. I'd like to acknowledge funding from the National Institutes of Health, in particular the National Institute of Dental and Craniofacial Research, and we certainly thank especially the patients for their involvement and support of their research. And I'd also like to acknowledge the fact that we had approximately 75 students in dentistry and nursing who were involved in this as well. And for them, this was an opportunity to see the synergy between two different branches of health. Thank you so much for your attention.